you know, a couple of my neighbors dragged me to Bible school when I was like 6 or 7 years old. I knew the basics of, you know, he died on the cross for sin, but I believed none of it.
Do I look in the camera or
no,
you?
No, you look at me.
Okay, got it.
All right, come
this
on
is
in.
Like a,
yeah,
this is
we're
set up. This is awesome. Hi.
It's already been, it's only been a couple hours, and it's everything's kind of just like surreal. I've seen all my friends going for so many years, and I'm finally here, and now I understand what I was missing.
We already had basically three different Bible studies, and we're going to worship and then having another Bible study. And that just, it just shows, like, seriously, how much focus is on the Lord.
If you were to walk into any school, public or private, and be like, hey, like, what are you worried about? It's not gonna, most of it's gonna be around, like, oh, I'm worried about where I'm gonna go, what I'm gonna do. Like, we don't spend much time in the now and, like, where we are now. We're, like, always planning for the future.
I think that sometimes students try to put on this, like, mask, you know, like, we're teenagers, we're just having fun, like, put on a brave face, kind of. And I think that, it's easy for us to hide behind it.
You know, social media, I mean, I'm sure everybody says this, but social media really has a hold on my generation and high schoolers today. And comparison and stuff just really flourishes. Seeing what other people are doing, seeing how many likes other people are getting, the comments of people saying, oh my gosh, you're so pretty, and then other people saying, I don't get that. Like, it's crazy to see how much that really affects people's mental health and well-being.
Nobody's ever grown up with technology the way we have. It's easy just to go on your phone and drown out everything else in the world and just focus on technology and social media, but you know, it's hard to put that aside and actually spend time with your family. I have to force myself to put my phone aside and live in the moment.
So a lot of high schoolers feel like they're alone. And I think it's really important that you know that you're not alone and to feel like you have someone to lean back on.
I think Silent Sounds is just the book, like the way it's written is really meant for our age group. And it talks about a lot of things that high schoolers or junior hires are like going through.
There's designated time for you to listen to what God has to say to you.
Time when I just get to look out at the water and just breathe and pray and just relax and really feel what God is telling me. There's nothing better than that.
Go back to the beginning.
Worship has played a huge part into Beach Retreat. That is one of my favorite things about Beach Retreat.
You feel the presence of God so much on you, and you look up and you see the hardest people become the softest people.
Christ moves in so many people's lives, and it's incredible.
You just kind of forget about the society that we're kind of trapped in. Just a different world. Not enough, unless you come.
I feel like God's teaching me that I have to have faith, because whenever I started, like, first actually reading the Bible, all I had was doubt. Like, this doesn't make sense. I don't agree with this. I just have questions in my mind, but I kept my heart open. That helped me, like, open up to God and, like, actually be able to, like, trust in Him and have faith.
I was an angry kid. I was really mad about everything. Things didn't go my way almost ever. I felt really unlucky. And I felt like I got dealt a bad hand in life. And being in a pit really makes you go to a last resort. And my last resort was praying. The only way to get out of that pit is actually talking to God. And that's coming from somebody who doesn't go to church every week, who doesn't praise the Lord all the time. And that's just bottom line truth. You don't get out of it unless you seek Him, really.
I'd been in a bad place for years. I was kind of just in a place of no care. You know, I felt like I was in this world alone. I mean, I was kind of just living life with no sense of consequence, no sense of care for myself or any of my friends, any of my family. I was just in just this closed tunnel vision mindset of, you know, I'm the only one here and it doesn't matter. You know, I was just on a bad path. And this one night I was offered a drug I'd never tried before, a dangerous drug. And I took it. Not, you know, 45 minutes later, I just started to feel depressed and sad. And I had been in a bad place before, but whatever I had taken had just skyrocketed my effect of hopelessness, and I didn't matter, and life didn't matter, and I was, like, the only one out there. And so I decided that I was going to end it right there. There was no, like, hope for me out of what I was feeling, and I was just ready to just leave. Didn't want to be there anymore.
Have you ever heard the term worldview?
Worldview being?
Worldview, like, what is your worldview? Has anyone asked you what your worldview is?
What my worldview, okay. How I view the world, my worldview, you got me on camera and everything, you put me on the spot. My worldview, what do you want me to say? What is my worldview?
What if God wanted to say something to you or say something to me, when would He say it? When would there be occasion in your life or in my life we'd be still enough, attentive enough for God to say something to you and to say something to me, because we're so involved with so many things and we're moving, and when in the world could God do that? Could it be that you have an appointment with Almighty God here at this place in Pensacola, Florida, and He has got you to the place that you're here and I'm here? And now He wants to say something clearly to you and clearly to me that will change your life, change my life. How does that happen? That's what we're going to talk about. Everybody has a worldview. What is your worldview? What is my worldview? How do we know that your worldview and my worldview is accurate? It is true of God. It's true of how life can be beautifully lived. So we're going to look at a biblical story, somebody that most of you are vaguely familiar with. His name is Joseph. We'll call him Joe. Joe had quite a life. He was the son of a wealthy rancher. He moved from Haran to West Canaan. And Big Jake took his 12 sons, and 11 of them were as sorry as anybody you could ever see. But then there was Joe, who was a favorite of the dad. The dad always was partial to him, always gave him more than the rest. And Joe had a dream. And he was a dreamer, and he told his older brothers, he said, I had a dream, and I was in charge of all you guys, and all of you were bowing down before me. And then Joe had another dream. He said, I had a dream, not only were all of you bowing down, but the whole family was bowing down before me. I was in charge of everybody. And that was just more than they could take. And then on top of that, Jake, this sorry dad, had a special cloak made for Joe. Long sleeves, multicolored. Joe was special to his dad, and his brothers hated him until finally his dad told Joe to go out and check on his brothers, and he said, I know that they're probably not working. And Joe was a tattletale. He loved to tell about my brothers are not doing that, and my brother didn't. And so they saw him coming, and they said, let's get rid of him. And so that was their plan. They went and captured Joe, and they took and were going to kill him. But the older brother, Reuben, said, we don't want to kill him ourselves. Let's just put him in one of those deep cisterns. So they took Joe, and they put him in the bottom of that cistern and left him to die. Time out. As we're here each evening, we're going to study Joe. And I'm going to take you through 4 years of college. And I'm going to explain biblically what Joe learned each one of his 4 years, his freshman year, his sophomore year, his junior year, and his senior year. And as we see what he learned, we will be able to say, that's what I need to learn. That's what I need to know. Because here was Joe now in the bottom of a deep pit, left, confused, lonely, knowing that he could not get out on his own, no way. He would have to be rescued. Somebody would have to save him. And in this freshman year, this is the first experience. We'll look at Joe. Let me tell you what Joe learned his freshman year, that God is real in the displacements of life. God is real. I want you to do this with me. God is real. He learned that in the displacements of life. Question. All of us here, most of us here, a lot of young people here, I know. If we had time to talk with you, you'd say in a different way, I'm in a pit too. All the way through life, young men and young women, we all have experiences. We feel like we're in a pit, and we feel like somehow we're out of place. We're not where we ought to be. Joe, at the bottom of that pit in which he could never get out of anyway by himself, but in that experience, Joe, I think, learned to listen to God, confess his pride, his arrogance, his cutting down family and brothers, down in the bottom of that dark, deep hole and pit where he didn't know he would die or live, Joe discovered that God is real. Do it again. God is real. Always, when we're out of place, when we're displaced, that wakes us up, shakes us up, causes us, even though we've been stiff-arming God, any interest in Jesus, any interest in a new life in him, we push that away. But in the bottom of a pit, God doesn't come and say, you know, I'm going to pull you out of that addiction, that relationship that's not clean. I'm going to pull you out with a rope. No, no, you know what God does? He goes down in the pit. Jesus Christ went all the way down in the pit. And he goes right down there where you are and where I am. He doesn't throw us a rope. He embraces us. And he says, I'll take all of that dirt and slime that led you into this pit, and I will pay that price, and I will lift you up and give you a new life. You see, in that experience, we discover, say it with me, that God is real. And then guess what happened? It took 3 days for a caravan to go from where they started all the way there to where Joe was in the bottom of the pit. Isn't it interesting that the caravan got there at just the right time, who had left 3 days before, and it got there just the right time that his brother Judah said, I think I'll make a profit out of Joe. I'll sell him as a slave. What if the caravan had left 3 hours later? Now, Joe died in the pit. What if the caravan, you see what I'm saying, young men and young women, wonderful teenagers, God is putting all this together. He's timing everything in your life and in my life. Every event that's happened in your past, everything that's going on now in your life, God has a purpose and a plan. He knows what he's doing. But they pulled him out, sold him as a slave, and now he's carried that caravan down to Egypt. They auctioned him off, and Potiphar, he was at the right hand of Pharaoh, who at this moment in history, young people, was the most powerful person on the planet, anywhere in the world. And here was Potiphar at his right hand in charge of all the military, and he bought Joe. Joe in his freshman year, God is real in this place. And now in his sophomore year, he discovers that God is real in the temptations of life. When you're tested, Joe soon became head of Potiphar's household. And all of a sudden, all of his crops began to flourish. All of a sudden, everything fell into place. And suddenly, Potiphar turned Joe, his slave, his Jewish slave, over to everything. He said, Joe, I trust you completely. And then one day, Mrs. Potiphar looked at Joe and said, man, what a guy. And she said, come and lie with me. Come and sleep with me. Come and have sex with me. And notice what Joe said. He said, no, absolutely not. Miss Potiphar went and propositioned him day after day after day until finally there was nobody else in the house. All the other workmen there were outside. It was only Joe and Miss Potiphar, and she comes and says, have sex with me, and she grabs him by his cloak that he had on, and he jerked away and ran out in the streets. And Miss Potiphar, she screamed, and she had his coat, and said, he tried to rape me. Oh, and she's screaming. And when Potiphar comes home, he is mad, and he takes Joe and has him thrown into the king's prison. Joe was kicked by his brothers, almost killed him, sold him as a slave. God is real in displacements. God is real in the temptations. And God is real in the injustices. He's in jail, in prison. He didn't know how long, forever, for something that he did not do. Finally, 2 years go by. Pharaoh had a dream that he said, you know, I dreamed I was standing by the Nile River, and there were these 7 fat cows, and then there were 7 skinny cows, and the 7 skinny cows went and ate up the 7 fat cows. What does that dream mean? And finally, Pharaoh said he couldn't sleep. He knew God was trying to speak to him. He didn't know what God was saying. And finally they said, can anybody in Egypt tell me what these dreams mean? I know it's a message from God. And the cupbearer, he said, there's this old Jewish boy, little kid in prison, and he interpreted a dream I had. I'd be back here, and he knows God, and I think he can interpret your dream. Pharaoh said, go get him. Pharaoh told his dream about the fat cows and the skinny cows, and Joe says, I know exactly what God is telling you. There's going to be 7 years of a bountiful harvest in Egypt. All the cattle, all the crops, it's going to be a fluent time. He said, but following that, there's going to be 7 lean years, 7 fat cows, 7 skinny cows. And Pharaoh said, well, what am I to do? He said, you'd better find somebody in the land who has enough integrity and wisdom that they can gather up all the grain and all the corn and get ready for those 7 lean years, then the 7 years of plenty. And Pharaoh thought and said, well, who can do that? Who can I trust? Who has that kind of wisdom and intelligence? And he said, you know, I don't know anybody quite like Joe. And he picked Joe. And Joe became the second most important man in the world, ruling over the crops, the prosperity, the land, everything that happened in Egypt. Joe. When I was a boy, I grew up in Laurel, Mississippi, a little town in South Mississippi, about 18,000 people. Somebody said it was between Little Barrel and Resume Speed on the highway. And it was very big, but it was my hometown. When I would come home, we had a little back alley behind my house, and I walked in that alley, and I can see that gate clearly in my eyes. I would open the gate, and I began to hear my mother singing. She was not a soloist. She could carry a tune. That was about it. But I can't tell you how many times I heard her sing just a wonderful little chorus. I've never heard it since sung by anybody else. And it's, in the morning I see his face, in the evening his form I trace, in the darkness his voice I know. I see Jesus everywhere I go. I think about that a lot of times, particularly when she has graduated to be with the Lord in heaven a long time ago, and that's become literally true for her. And I looked at those words and I put them on the inside of your bracelet. Don't look at them, they're all there. In the morning I see his face, in the evening his form I trace, in the darkness his voice I know, because I picked up the fact that our boy, Joe, we've been studying, that's the genius of him. Everywhere he went, he understood that God is real. So he understood that God was omnipresent. What does that mean? Wherever you go, whatever you're doing, whatever the situation, God is always there. He was there before you got there. He will be there when you're there. He'll be there after you left. God is omnipresent. And if we can begin to understand that, the reality of God, as Joe did in his fabulous story, we'll be way, way, way ahead of the game of life. I trust that while you've been here, you've developed a new worldview. And I trust that you'll begin to see God, understand the leading of his Spirit in your life. You'll be able to relate to situations and people in a way that will be out of this world, yet you're living in this world, yet I'm living in this world. That is that new world view. We see with different kind of eyes. Now, this story isn't complete. God never leaves anything dangling. Doesn't leave anything that hadn't been attended to. Because there's his godless, mean brothers back there. When is that going to get straightened out? Is it ever going to get straightened out? But a famine came to Canaan. And Big Jake there on the ranch said, okay, guys, go to Egypt and you buy there with this gold and silver that we saved up and bring back some grain where we can have bread. We're going to die. We're going to starve to death. This famine looks like it's extended. Of all places those boys didn't want to go, it was Egypt. And when they got there, they went into the room where foreigners would come in order to buy grain, because the whole part of the world there was in privation, in famine. And Job there would be administrating that, and he looked out, and you could be sure he recognized his brothers. And then they came time to come up and make their request, and they all fell down before Job. Don't you think he remembered that dream he had as a young kid? Don't you think he thought, you know, that dream that God gave me, that someday my family would bow down. I didn't understand it, but there they are, all of them bowed down before Job. How would he handle that moment? How would you have handled it? A lot of us would say, I got you now, boys. Yeah. But he didn't. So he puts them all in prison, and Joe listens to them. They don't know anybody understands Hebrew. They didn't know an Egyptian was there who was really not an Egyptian. And he is listening to them arguing with another, and he sees that conscience set in. They begin to talk about, I told you, Reuben said we shouldn't have put the boy in the pit. I told you we shouldn't have his blood on our hands. And they begin to blame and to criticize. And a whole section of the Bible talks about, and Job heard it all. He knew that they still was carried down within their life guilt. And then he brings them out. He sells them the grain. They take off. He says, I'm going to keep Simeon here, one of the brothers, in case you ever have to come back. And don't come back and let you show me that other brother you left at home. That would be Joe's full brother, who was named Benjamin, his little brother. The little brother whom his mother died while giving birth to, Benjamin. And so they go back home and they open their grain sacks, and whoa, all their money was in each one of their sacks. And this frightened them. And then they tell the story to their father and said, he kept Simeon there, and we can't go back unless we take Benjamin with us, because we told him that Benjamin was at home, and Jacob goes berserk. What a sorry father he was. Why did you tell him about Benjamin? What's the matter with you dumb witch? You're so. And so they make their way back to Egypt. Joe looks at them, and he sees his only full brother, Benjamin, little Benjamin. He was touched so deeply, and it's a long, beautiful story there. He gives them their grain, and they go out, and he puts a silver cup in Benjamin's bag, and he sends his troops and says, whoever has stolen my silver cup, after I've been so generous with all you Hebrews. And it was in Ben's bag. They put it in there. And he drags them back and says, this one who stole that cup will be a slave. That was Benjamin. And the brothers go berserk. They say, we can't go back without Benjamin. And Judah steps up and says, I'll take the place. I'll be the slave. Let Benjamin go. Let Benjamin go. It would kill my dad for him not to go back. Let him go. Joe couldn't take it any further. He told all the Egyptians to get out of the room. Get out of here. And now he was in there with his brothers. They had no idea who he was. And he looked at him. He says, come close. Come close. He said, in Hebrew. Hebrew, their language, he said, I am your brother, Joe. And then the brothers didn't know how to handle it. And finally, there's one little verse in Scripture that is so meaningful. Joe said to those sorry brothers that he'd forgiven, and now they were broken. He said, look, it's all right. He said, you meant it for evil when you sold me, when you wanted to kill me. But he said, God meant it for good. Isn't it great? All the displacements, all the temptations, all the injustices, all the time you and I are forgetting. So many times the world means it for evil, or other people mean it for our hardness, but God means it for good. You see, Job understood all the way through. He was a genius of life. What? That God is real. Absolutely. How does this apply to us? Everybody here just about has raised your hand. I'd like to change. I'd like for God to be real to me. How does that happen? It happens from the inside out. Change your inside, change my inside, all of a sudden everything outside is changed. How does this work? There has to be a moment in every person's life in which you say, Lord, I get it. I confess sin. I turn from all known garbage in my life, and I invite Jesus Christ to come in. And he comes in, and he begins to change you and me from the inside out. And that's salvation. That's life. That's reality. And young people, that changes everything. It changes how you see everything. It changes how you get up in the morning. It changes how you think. It changes how you move. It just revolutionizes everything about your life. It takes all the darkness and turns the light on, and you begin to walk and live in the light of Christ and his Holy Spirit.
In that moment, I felt like I was at rock bottom. I was at the very bottom, and I could not get out. You know, one of my great friends, Miranda, ended up, you know, in my car with me.
He was having a really rough night and had talked about, like, just, like, suicidal thoughts and, like, things that had been going through his head a lot, and just, like, would not unlock the door. And he was like, I'm gonna do it. I'm so sorry. And eventually I was able to, like, reach my hand into the door and unlock the car, and I sat in the car and I talked to him. And I just kind of walked him through, like, what it meant to have a relationship with Jesus and how he wasn't alone and how there's a God out there that loves him.
She related to me and sat there and just, you know, told me how great Jesus was, how I always have a place in his heart, how I'm never alone, how I have somewhere to go, even when I feel like I have nowhere to go. And it changed everything for me. I just instantly just calmed down and took a deep breath, and my mind started thinking logically again. The Lord speaking through Miranda was what got me out of that pit and pulled me back out to life. After, you know, Miranda brought me to the church for the first time the day after, you know, that night, you know, I met some of the people there. I met some of the pastors, some friends, started coming to Bible study. And then some of the pastors, specifically Kale, brought up Beach Retreat to me, and I'd heard of it. I've talked to friends about it. You know, I really thought it was just a, you know, beach getaway for some friends. But after a few months of going to the church, I decided that I had to go. Here I am. This is Miranda Smith. She is my best friend. She's always there for me, no matter what. Good times, bad times.
It's awesome to get to see that. Something that has been around in my life, that I got to share that with Brennan, and that, like, what brings me joy got to bring him joy too, and it brought him out of a dark place. And it just feels really amazing that he had that opportunity and that I got to be a part of his story.
Dear God, thank you for loving me. Thank you for that plan, that program, that dream, that reality you have for my life. Lord, I want to be in on that. So right now, I confess all the garbage. I confess all my sin. I turn away from all of it. I go in the opposite direction. And right now, I ask Jesus Christ to come into my life. Change me from the inside. Cleanse me from the inside. Lord, I give you my feet, my hands, my body, my mind, my eyes, my ears. I want to see the world in a different way because you have come inside my life and changed me completely.
think baptism is a way to start fresh and a way to express, like, show everyone that, like, you've accepted him and that you want him to show you the path and, like, guide you in the right way for everyone and, like, show everyone that we love God and God is real.
Jesus is with me, and I feel good about myself now that I believe, like, he's, like, with me and in my heart. Yesterday, I gave my life to Jesus, and now today, I'm getting baptized for him.